Day two of the February 06 7-day retreat in Springwater. It is really wonderful, full of wonder, if we can start right out with the depth of silence. Because if we really listen deeply, silently, quietly, there's always more silence behind this silence. I don't know how else to describe it. A deep silence behind deep silence. Just listen, and not for something. It is there. It is not, doesn't have to be sought out. How can you describe it? Yesterday in the group, someone was very eager to come upon that which I seem to have described as constant. Not during these past 2 days, but in another meeting that this person attended. He said, you spoke about the difference between attention and awareness. That attention is that which moves around like a searchlight at night. You've seen it, we've all seen it, these strong things, I don't know what you call them. We call them in German, how shall I say it, Scheinwerfer. Throwing the light, throwing the beam, a beam thrower, Scheinwerfer, how do you call those things that go when you have an amusement park or something, they want to draw attention to their location. There is this huge light on the night sky going back and forth. And of course we had it in Germany during the air raids. Before an air raid, when these things were moving around and you could see it, you knew there was something in the offing. There would soon be the sirens and then the alarm and then the anti-aircraft and the bombs. But this thing was there. And this I liken to attention. Searching, drawing attention to itself, looking for something, and all of that happening in awareness, which does not move. It doesn't move. It is here, immovable. Immovable. And the way the great saints have talked about it. It is not born and it does not die. It's always here. It's our meager language trying to capture it, which it can't. Something always here. And the best way to come upon it is like we did at the beginning. It's silent, very quiet. And there's something behind this silence, which is always there. Always is a bad word. It's a time word. It creates time forever and so forth. I don't mean to do that thing, creating time forevermore or so. Just the silence behind the attention or enveloping or giving space to attention. Attention happening in the silent space of awareness. Ramana Maharshi, the Indian saint, yogi, whatever word you want to give to somebody who is really beyond the categories of language, he says it is the light behind the eyes. That's a wonderful description. Or that which makes seeing possible. And then you get really interested, you get stimulated, you want to find that light behind the eyes, and you can't. It's impossible. The eyes can't look behind themselves. It only manifests quietly in great silence, stillness. That stillness behind quietness. Enough said about it. That which does not move, it doesn't look for anything, because it contains everything. Attention looks for things. We all have heard many times this famous dialogue between the man of the people and the master, who was sitting on the floor of his studio or study, where he was doing calligraphy, with big sheets of paper in front of him and an ink pot and brush, and this man of the people stepping in to this room and asking the master to please write down for him the most crucial, highest maxim or principle of Buddhism, that which captures it in one word. And the Ikkyu was his name, Ikkyu. He took his brush, it was very obliging, and wrote in broad strokes the what do you call it, this word, somebody who does
character,
yes, for attention. Attention. And the man, the commoner, he was a little bit surprised but didn't let go of that surprise and said, "Is that all? Can you add a little more to this? It seemed to be too meager. Too little for this big piece of paper. Just this character for attention." And smiling with a slight bow, the Ikkyu took his brush again and wrote twice running, "Attention, attention." Well, it wasn't very satisfactory to the man who had expected a paper full of stuff. And this went back and forth. I don't remember what the dialogue, but in the end he says, after having now three pieces of paper with the word attention three times running, at the end of his patience, and he says, "What does this word attention mean anyways?" And Ikkyo, smiling, says, "Attention means attention." There you have it. This is what it would be nice to adopt for the talks and question period. Rather than wrecking our brains to find a better way of explain what cannot be explained. Just say, "Attention means attention. Don't you see?" Now, you can imagine a man who's been doing this all his life, receiving people, men and women of the people, it says, or commoners, people who are interested in Buddhism. I'd like to take an inside peek of the master sitting there. He has done this many, many times. And here he just says, it means what it means. He probably saw the impatience or the irritation in the man of the people. It was quite clear. Because when you sit there and watch somebody asking you a question, you see and hear more than the words spoken. You hear and see the mood out of which these words arise. Maybe a suppressed anger or impatience. Maybe some feeling of superiority or trying to lay a trap for the master who thinks he's so terrific. And that is all clear to Ikkyo, who sits there on the floor doing calligraphy. It's all clear. When we meet each other open-minded, not full of ego, what we want to teach the other person or what we want to show of ourselves. None of that. Ego is not there. It is a silence or a presence without the me, which seems to be so impossible, but it isn't impossible. It happens. It can happen anytime. Presence without the me. In that, everything is revealed of each other. You have probably experienced it yourselves. When you're not full of yourself, you can see what transpires in people who talk and question and try to be somebody more than what they are. They put on masks that we so often have learned to fool others about ourselves and fool ourselves about ourselves. Imagery, we call it. It's all very plain and revealed to her or him who sits there with a minimum of self-consciousness, ego involvement. And at what point did this man of the people or woman of the people, they didn't have women so brash to step right into the master's studio there. They were probably, had probably learned to be submissive and stay behind I've talked to a Japanese woman, a modern Japanese woman, but raised very old-fashionedly. And she said she was just raised not to speak up, not to be anything that would produce herself in the eyes of others, but to the opposite, to do the opposite. To minimize, like this little icon or thing on the computer, this little line that is always down, pressed down, minimizing herself, making herself appear less than what she is or feels that she is. This is what is given to human beings, this ability to pretend to be somebody, and that can be revealed in attention, in attention. It just jumps right out at you. Somebody's ego pretenses. And so this master knew what he was doing when he kept writing attention. He wanted to shake up this person, say, be a little bit more quiet. Don't ask so quickly. Don't answer so quickly. But look at yourself. Be aware of yourself. Let this me come into awareness, in this immovable awareness, which shows everything without a fault, without any hesitation. So, let it be. If one cannot grasp it, rather familiarize oneself more and more with that monkey mind. It's been called the monkey mind, which, like that light thrower of what is Scheinwerfer in English? What is that thing called?
Searchlight.
Searchlight. Yeah. To be aware of that, not to always look outward for something that will enrich me, make me more clever, more respected, more this or that, but to let what is happening inside come into awareness, which is always there, immovable, showing what is transpiring. So how long does it take till we get it? Not to ask any more of these questions, rattling questions, but to fall silent and let what is there, obviously, clearly, to come into awareness. And that, the master says, is the highest principle of Buddhism. Both attending and letting come into awareness. It is both. Attending is the movement from here to there, taking it all in, whereas awareness has already taken it all in. It's all here. Plain to see. Open. Not hidden. Not. Not in. You don't have to search for it. Because it is that that makes all of that possible. It makes thinking and looking and hearing and being silent possible.
possible. And if we're quiet for a moment and not look for anything, just let appear what is here, there may be a notion, a touch of that which is always here, behind the obvious. So this may not have been satisfactory yet to some people, but that's what we learn in this work of the moment, that the unanswered quandaries, the silent questions, are working. They're working in us, undetected. We don't notice it, not necessarily, but they're working. They try to figure things out or let things alone, leave things alone. But there's work going on in questions and wonderings that are not yet answered, have not yet been seen through. Not to despair over that. On the contrary, these are very precious things. Our unanswered questions that have a marvelous way of operating quietly, inwardly. So, two things that come up in every retreat. I don't think I'll ever live to the day that this will not come up. The whole question or quandary about choice that seems to be so deeply embedded in us, in our whole program, that there is choice, that we are free to choose. It seems so obvious to those who insist on it that we have free choice. Because you can just lift your arm and say, well, I chose to lift this arm. I don't know what we prove by that. Yeah. That if we start to really question it deeper, we come upon, and we did that yesterday in the afternoon dialogue group, you come eventually upon Adam and Eve lifting their arm to eat an apple. There was a lot of motive there. They didn't just, but of course it said that they had free choice. They didn't have to pick that apple. Why did they pick that apple? Because they wanted to have knowledge. They wanted to see better, to know better, to live better. Something better. Which reveals itself as the motive underlying all of our movements. Wanting that something better or longer lasting to keep or to bring back, not to lose and then I have to find it laboriously, look for it. That precious moment of presence. But it does escape. So, if we have this free choice, which is so embedded in the mind of most people, why don't we choose and have it done with? Being enlightened, being present, being intelligent, or whatever. If there was, in truth, this free choice, certainly our behavior does not give evidence of it, because we have not found what we have chosen to find. Happiness, equilibrium, satisfaction, a quiet mind. Or have we found it? The moment we think we have found it and we watch whether it's still there, it's already monkeying around again. So, why is it that we are so convinced that we have the freedom to choose? And that we, is it because it crops up in language all the time, the way we talk? And by talking this way, we convince ourselves of something that is not true. That I chose to do this or that. I chose to come here for retreat. We went into it yesterday. I don't have to make a big effort to go through this again. Each one who has this conviction, make this effort yourselves, if it's important to you, to trace what really brought you here. Or what really made you do this rather than that. And you may find your world totally populated, overpopulated with those motives, carriers of motives. And then another one, and another one. And the freedom melts away like snow on the hot pavement. The other thing we are very convinced of is very hard to think otherwise is that people do things even though they know better. That we have to free my mouth here. Stop talking. It is so similar to the freedom of choice thing that I will not bring this up. That our thought that if people would only do what they know is right, then we would have a better world. And rather than ponder our convictions of our freedoms, to watch what keeps us in bondage, to watch that at the moment it happens, that we cannot do what we have had all good intentions to do. What is in the way? And watch it. Not have another opinion about it, but observe as we go. The one person said yesterday, I think it was the first thing in the dialogue group, when I sit here, I get this tense feeling on my chest, in my chest, oppressive, squeezing it together, these muscles here, because I see the hall full of people who disapprove of me, and the urge to show that I'm a good boy, that I'm all right, that I'm not what you think I am or what I'm afraid that you think that I am. A very complicated process in the mind. Feeling oppression coming from others who haven't said a thing. It's just projected onto them that they are judges. And we're sitting in judgment here, being usually judged as insufficient or faulting. So we can see maybe that these are habitual thoughts because one has brought it up practically in every retreat. It's the same thing that happens, this feeling oppressed by what one thinks are other people's opinions about me. And one sees it as a complicated way of habitual thinking, not to know, not to think it is truth that is arising in the mind. One can see that, and still here is the chest tense, aching, wanting to be relieved. And the person said, I watch the tension, and maybe it gives a little bit. Well, yeah, watch it the next time and this time, and not just this particular specific tension that comes from this particular specific idea that people around me have nothing else to do but judge me. Let it happen. Let it be. We can live with so many things without needing to suffer from them. And if we suffer from them, let's suffer from them. But there's more to this living and being than these old habits of thinking and then reacting to the thoughts. You could say, well, what else is there at the moment that I'm so beset by this problem? Well, be quiet, silent, and listen. Like you have never listened before. Not just to the specific tension arising out of specific ideas and beliefs and opinions, but the whole thing, that awareness behind everything, the beingness, in touchness with something that embraces it all. It can be felt when there's the burning desire to meet it. Not with a searchlight looking for it, but quieting down. Not uttering another word. So silent. Are we silent right now? Or are stuff going on in the mind? It's just the mind that's moving. Habitually, always has moved in habitual ways. Let it move and pay no particular attention to it. It's not worth it. Just feel it move, feel it arouse the emotions and sensations. And there is something behind all of that, enveloping it all, that is so large it could never be comprehended. Are we there together right now with something too large, too vast to be comprehended? Very, very quiet. Still. Are you still waiting for something? Expecting something? Let that go. There's nothing to be expected because it's already here. It is that which makes the talking, the listening, the attending possible. We will end the talk for today.